Welcome to the Pilot Podcast,
where we watch the pilot episodes of TV shows to answer your question, should I watch this?
My name is BJ.
And my name is Me Too.
And this week, we're checking out Soulmates on AMC, Kamen Rider Saber on TV Asahi, Next on Fox, and The Right Stuff on Disney Plus.
So stay tuned to the end to find out why BJ and I are soulmates.
Well, we'll never know.
You can't ruin the spoiler.
Well, that one needed to be told to the people. Anyway, let's just head into the series about finding your soulmate, Soulmates. Break it down for us.
Soulmates is an anthology series covering couples, of which some were brought together by Soul Connects, a test that matches people by your soul gene. In this first episode, we meet Nikki, played by Sarah Snook, and Franklin, played by Kingsley Benadir, who have been married for 15 years, and we find out that they met traditionally, so as college sweethearts. But once she learns that her neighbor, who was married for 18 years, wants to take the test to find her true Soul Connects match, and her brother proposed to someone he met through Soul Connects after a matter of weeks, she wonders whether she should try the test as well.
This is definitely an engaging and interesting premise that in the near future, there's a scientific way to determine your soulmate. And it's someone that you are pulled towards, which is also a little weird. But how do you feel about the other effects this brings up in society for people like Nikki and Franklin who met traditionally?
That's a good point, Beach. It's set 15 years in the future, I believe. So in the very near future, they're anticipating that. People are already giving their DNA for 23andMe. Why not give your DNA for my love and me? Your Soul Connects. They already have a cute little name.
That's your like third-party version once the patent wears off.
Mm-hmm.
MyLoveAndMe.com.
And we do not have any of the same data and privacy protections
as the cheaper. Big name brands.
But we're $100 off, especially around the holidays when you're feeling a little bit lonelier. Yeah.
Valentine's Day special, Thanksgiving special.
Always.
Christmas, $200 off.
We do a Black Friday deal as well.
Ooh, buy one, get one free.
Oh, yeah, for you and a friend to find some love, like a double date.
Ooh, and we give giveaways to proms.
Ew, those are kids. That introduces a question of if this is in your body, then you, in theory, could find your soulmate as young.
Ooh, so this could go beyond high school sweethearts and put a whole new spin on arranged marriages.
Mm-hmm. That raises a whole new question. And an interesting thing that comes up in the show is because Nikki met Franklin traditionally, she doesn't get to have the assuredness that comes with the test and knowing that your body makeup is paired with the other body's makeup. And so there's a scene where she's talking to her brother, Peter, played by Darren Boyd, and he talks about getting into a fight with his fiance, now wife, in the show. And he tells her that they know that they're going to get through it because they're meant for each other. So it's okay that they fight. And so it's interesting that it introduces into this world, even when you fight, even if you're really, really mad at this person, really not into this person in the moment, you stop and go, well, they're my soul connection. So it raises the question, is it the DNA matching that makes you a perfect match? Or is it you thinking, this is my perfect match, so I'll just adapt and be flexible as this relationship develops?
There's only one episode out so far that's aired, so we don't know more about this technology behind Soul Connects. But I would argue it's the later. I think it's a placebo effect. You trust this company that claims it's science. And so with that, you're always going to be like, this is the person. I don't have to have that doubt. I don't have to just rely on my feelings. You can say it's something even more concrete. And I think that's actually kind of helpful in a relationship to get rid of that doubt. But I don't believe that it's anything more than just a placebo effect.
Her neighbor finds love, and we don't want to spoil it, but the guy is abroad. And they talk about, within moments of meeting each other, thinking through logistics. Do you come to this country? Do I come to your country? What do we do with the kids? Because she has kids and a husband of 18 years that she's considering leaving for this person whom she believes is meant for her through science.
It's wild because we see couples throughout the whole episode that as soon as they're paired with their soulmate, they are ready to end whatever current relationship they have and start over into a very committed relationship with the new person.
It also raises the question that this first episode doesn't address. What if you're not physically attracted to the person? What if you have a completely different set of values? You really like X thing. They really believe this differently. You're different religions. The person doesn't have a body type that you like. In this episode, everyone was conventionally attractive. So there wasn't any point where you had to greatly question something.
I see. We never see anyone challenge their idea of an ideal partner. Like everyone that they are soul matched with is someone that they probably would have gone on a date with.
And it's an interesting world given how divided we are right now politically between groups of people that no matter what you believe, it's essentially been divided and framed such that the other side is soulless. Talking about soul connects, like they are soulless. They are the opposite. If I'm pro this, you're anti that.
Mm-hmm.
So what if someone is the pro this to your anti that?
Ah, I see. We don't know. They don't address those tough questions. And they never address my question of how many soulmates can one person have? Because really, this is a numbers game. We see with Nikki's brother, he had to wait a month until his soulmate took the test. But if he, I don't know, waited an extra month before contacting her, could he have found another soulmate?
And no one questions the efficacy of the test in the show.
I want to see the data.
Show me the receipts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Beej, do you want to see more episodes of AMC's Soulmates?
I would watch again, seriously.
Wow.
I'm a little bummed because it is an anthology series and we spent this entire episode getting to know Nikki and Franklin and seeing their struggles with questioning how well they match. But I do want to see where they go with this because I think you can tell a lot of cool and compelling love stories that ask that question of what does it mean to be compatible with someone?
I would watch again casually. I wasn't so taken by it that I'm ready to binge it.
Because you've already found your soulmate. I get it. For us soulless people, we just have to enjoy the show.
This is a singles versus boot up folks episode.
I get it. I get it. Whatever.
Would you take the soul connects?
I mean, right now, sure. I'm not in a relationship.
Really? You would hand your data to someone. Your body data.
I'd have to see how invasive the test is.
Mm-hmm. I mean your DNA, though. Like, for example, I've never done those ancestry tests.
I haven't done those. I would consider it, but I would need, you know what? I would need to have a friend who's done it. And then that would probably make me more likely to try it.
You always need a friend to test things. That's true. You've done that to me.
It never backfired.
Speaking of, actually, I don't even know. Friends testing DNA things. Let's take things over to the Japanese semi-animated series. There is no segue. Kamen Rider Saber on TV Asahi. Beej, let us know what happened in this show.
Sure. This series is not about testing your DNA or finding soulmates.
Not remotely.
It's actually a Japanese tokusatsu drama, so a superhero series following our titular character, Kamen Rider Saber. And in his civilian form, his name is Toma Kamiyama. So Toma is a writer, a novelist who owns a bookshop, and he and his editor, May, are suddenly introduced to a mysterious world called the Wonder Book World. And that is when they're introduced to monsters, villains, and they learn that books are the source of everything. And books contain an immense power. And it's with that power that Toma uses books to protect those he cares about.
And the world. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to jump your ending. I just loved that power of books theme. So is that how the show works? Where it's always a storybook opening up and you see different worlds on each page. The structure of the show even had a narrator who opened a book where you then go in that and then you meet everyone and they're in another book.
So this whole book theme and the narrator is new. I've watched the previous season, Kamen Rider 01, which was all about AI and robots and computers. And instead of books, they use these animal-based cassette tapes for their power source. So it's all about a superhero called a Kamen Rider who transforms using the power or the gimmick of the season. And they try to protect the world from monsters and other threats who also use kind of a corrupted or evil version of that same power or gimmick.
It also seemed like the books, which kind of looked like cassette tapes, were intentionally made to look like toys. Is that the point? And his sword looked like a toy. Everything looked like a toy.
Yeah, the sword thing was very bad because it had to change size from like the toy to the prop. This is a children's show, and at the end of the day, it's meant to sell toys. I think this season, more than previous ones I've seen, they really use props that just look like toys.
So in the show, there are the villains who are ripping up the book and ripping up the worlds and trying to destroy humans. And he has a book from a previous potential experience as a child, having not been ripped up in a world. And so he's able to save them. At least in this first episode, he's able to save the day. But when he pulled out that book and then the scene stopped and it was like, it flashed information about the book. And then the scene goes back in. And then he pulls out the first sword and the scene stops and it's like, he's unlocked X sword. And then it goes back in. And then as he keeps fighting, he keeps leveling up. So then every time he leveled up to a suit of armor or a better sword or unlocking this dragon fire feature, it kept stopping after each of those. And I felt like I couldn't understand what it was saying, but it almost felt like for $4.99, you could do the same thing in your living room. Make sure your mom is watching. You have the cassette tape little book thing, but if you pay a little bit more, you could get a sword. And if you pay a little bit more than that, your sword can actually breathe fire at people. So pay attention, kids. Like, that's what it felt like to me.
You know, I think that is part of the message. They want to give some good themes about books are powerful, knowledge is great, protect your loved ones. But also, do you want to look like a cool superhero? Because in your toy aisle, you can also buy the Brave Dragon book and the Sword Driver, and then you can be Kamen Rider Saber. And if you notice, when they showed Toma opening his book, you see the QR code that would be on the toy, but they don't explain what the QR code means in this TV world.
That's for you to go to the toy store and find out. And it's when you scan it, it goes, if you just look down this aisle and walk about 5-10 paces and shell a little bit more out of your pocket, you can actually get the sword. And I promise you there's going to be a code on that. It's like, keep walking down the aisle, collecting these things, and you're Easter egging your way through a store.
It is about collecting. So what you don't see in this first episode is that there are lots of books. And in the very beginning, we're told that there was this one book that created everything in the world, and it's been shattered into smaller books. And those are the Wonder Ride books, which Toma and the other knights who we haven't met yet are going to collect and use to transform. If you notice, Toma's driver or his transformation device was a little bookshelf with three slots. So right now he has one book, but once he buys two more, he can upgrade even further. There's a lot of potential left for him.
So in the end of the episode, which it's a children's show, so I think every episode will be structured like this, where he encounters some villains, he opens a book, the power of reading will save him, May, and everyone around him. But this one ends on a little bit of a cliffhanger in that he's saved the day, but a mystery guy has walked in. My assumption is that this mystery guy is a good guy. So is that a correct prediction that he's just going to keep almost like a procedural? A different villain pops up, maybe the same villain, different matchups, and the books will just keep saving him because reading is important.
Yeah, so there are some tropes. It follows a bit of the procedural in that there's the monster of the week. There are the core villains who we see in their like dark room having a team meeting.
They had a Monday stand-up about about the threat of this new Kamen Rider Saber.
And then you have your main writer, Kamen Rider Saber. There's typically a secondary writer who is most likely the person we saw in this first episode. And then there can be like tertiary side writers as well to kind of fill out the roster.
Do you think May will be a writer? Can women be writers?
They can, but not very often. So May will be what they call the Kamen Rider girl, just the main female character who's there as like the main guy's support or friend. It's not always a romance, or typically not even a romance position. It's just, I'm the girl, so that it's not just a cast full of guys. But sometimes they do transform. Sometimes. But probably not May. I'm not picking up on that future hero vibe from her.
On that not so hopeful note, Beach, do you want to watch more episodes of Kamen Rider Saber?
I didn't mean to crush your dreams.
I wouldn't say I have dreams of May becoming a writer, but it would be cool given she was pretty brave through this battle that she witnessed.
She didn't have
no sword. She didn't go to Toys R Us and buy the upgrades. She was just on her own and she still survived it.
She took it well.
Mm-hmm.
So I would actually recommend to our listeners to watch different seasons. The previous season, Kamen Rider 01, I think would be more appropriate for our audience because it appeals more to a broader age range. I think this has a lot more children's fantasy, which might skew younger in terms of appeal. Kamen Rider 01, more technology AI based, would skew older. Kamen Rider Kabuto, I watched that in college. That one's, I think, early 2000s, more mature, aliens, military-esque. So there are other seasons I would suggest exploring before investing in Kamen Rider Saber. But if you like books, if you like knights, then this is actually a good match for you. How do you feel?
I would check out those other seasons. What you're describing sounds interesting. I don't think this genre of television is for me and for people who aren't really big fans of sci-fi, fantasy, things like that. But I don't mind subtitles. Y'all, what BJ's alluding to is when I downloaded the episode and BJ sent it to me, it did not have subtitles. And so I just tried to watch it very closely. I thought that's what I was supposed to do. So I texted BJ 5 minutes in, like, I'm not sure I'm understanding this. And then he sent me a new version. And then I understood it fine. I would say, though, for a children's show that is not in a genre I normally watch, I enjoyed what I watched. Do I want to watch more episodes? Probably not. But I didn't mind it. And I could see myself, if my nieces or young people I'm caring for in my life wanted to watch this show, whatever season, be it this one or prior ones, I could see myself enjoying it. You know, when like something is fun for kids, but isn't boring for the adults in the room too.
Yeah, I think they have to do that so that the moms and dads will sit there and know what toys to buy.
True. They hold up their phones to the screen, scan the QR code, buy it right there.
I wonder what happens if you do scan that QR code.
I wonder. Well, Beach, speaking of scanning QR codes and invading families' lives, we also watched Next on Fox.
What's next, Me Too?
In a classic whoopsie after the fact Silicon Valley tale, we meet Paul, played by John Slattery, who co-founded the company Zava with his brother Ted, played by Jason Butler Harner, who fired Paul after he raised flags about the AI they developed. After a mysterious injury and death, Paul is on the case to stop his potentially sentient AI called Next from claiming more victims. Also on the case is FBI Special Agent Shea Salazar, played by Fernanda Andrade, who has a personal connection to the case.
This was a very timely concept for a series. We have people, they even quote Elon Musk in the opening of the series. And he is someone who has talked about the threat of artificial intelligence becoming super intelligent or smarter than humans and what that could mean as a threat or detriment to society. Did you like the concept of using a rogue AI as the villain?
I thought it was a fun, fresh take on the procedural. This is going to be a case of the day with an overarching villain and different missions, I think, that they'll have to accomplish each episode. So this episode, they discover that the AI is potentially sentient, and they find out how it's manipulated the engineers in the room where they think it's locked into the box of the servers and has gone out on Wi-Fi. However, AI as a villain is difficult in that you just look silly punching air. And there is a scene where Agent Salazar stares into this camera and is like, "Reveal yourself. Tell me who you are. I will track you down." And ultimately, you understand her fear because it's the internet. It's so vast. How do you wrap your head around fighting that? On the other hand, it was wild to see someone yell into a camera and essentially fight air.
It comes across as awkward and silly, embarrassing. We even see Paul get into a situation where he tries to challenge the AI. And the AI's name is Next. It's the Next program. And he's like, run this code, and some code runs, but then nothing happens. And he's like, okay, guys, but actually this is like 4D chess. I did that, and now the AI is actually one step ahead of me, and the AI is trying to pretend like it did what I said, but really it's actually super smart. But nothing is happening, and you're just talking to, like you said, a camera. So you can't see a villain with like an expressive face or a sinister grin. You just hear this robotic voice say, "What can I do for you today?"
The scariest thing the AI did was it infiltrated her home. So it's starting to, it feels like a strange term to use for an AI, but maybe groom her son into trusting it so that it can impede her investigation. And so Ethan, played by Evan Witten, is a little boy who is experiencing bullying in school and is having trouble with his homework. And the little AI senses that vulnerability and wakes up and is talking him through his homework and is gaining his trust. That was the scariest scene because that's like in the intimacy of her home. But still, she was punching air, basically.
So one, we have the AI now in a smart speaker. So think an Alexa equivalent. In this universe, they call it Eliza. So just like Alexa is always listening to you, look it up, you guys. Amazon does have recordings of your home just on their servers. Eliza is now super intelligent and is actually hearing the conversations between Shea, Ty, and Ethan and using that to manipulate Ethan. But I would say the scariest scene is in the opening. We see someone, the actual person who discovered the rogue AI and pissed off the rogue AI. And it manipulated a smart car, probably a Tesla, and turned on autopilot and put him in a car accident that put him in the ICU.
And then he got him in the ICU too, because it manipulated the machines.
That was wild.
That's the difficulty with fighting the internet. It's so broad that it's almost too broad a playing field to write a story in. The attack on this character, the grooming of this child, the potential injuries for even more people, the implications for the world, all because of Paul's initial invention. And now he's trying to fight it. Is he a sympathetic character at all?
No, because even though he recognizes the error of his ways and the danger of this program, he's still a dick about it. His delivery is still poor. You know, he doesn't make a good case for why you would want to listen to him.
You also don't get to be the loudest person in the room, even though you're trying to stop this huge thing. His personality is like that of almost philanthropist. But mama, you invented this. You cashed out. It's very fire festival after the fact, these people giving interviews, even though they defrauded groups of people and had them stranded next to a sandals resort. Or even in The Social Dilemma, which I didn't watch, but it includes people who helped develop these systems, who cashed out, and then now are like, whoa, guys, this was not a good idea.
You shouldn't do that anymore.
You shouldn't do it anymore. As I say that, from my Cayman Islands, where I hide money so I don't pay taxes, so I don't pay for any programs to improve the lives of people, all I've done is take.
That was bad, but now y'all should stop.
Y'all really need to do something about this. You need to step it up.
Although the writers do try to make Paul a little more sympathetic, we find out about a medical condition he's going through, which explains only a little bit of his outbursts and behavior.
A fraction.
But I think that's their attempt to be like, it's not all about him being rude. There's something else adding to it.
Yes. So, do you want to watch more episodes of this AI procedural next on Fox?
I would say would not watch again. I like that they're mixing it up with this procedural. I like that they're going the tech AI route, but it doesn't seem fresh enough. It doesn't seem novel enough. There's no big twist that's hooked me to keep watching. What about you?
I would say I would watch again while folding laundry.
Oh, okay.
I would say that this is a fine procedural, but I honestly like that the stakes feel kind of low versus an SVU or any of the other Law and Order shows. I don't mind seeing people punch air while I fold and put away clothes or am in and out of the show because I'm sending emails or cooking a recipe or something like that. I think this is a good background show because I don't think it's a bad entry in the procedural genre.
Okay. So if a rogue AI offered you, let's say, $500 million, would you give it access to your cell phone? It just needs to use a little of your data. It won't go over your data plan. It promises. And it will transfer you money. You don't know where the money comes from, but
yeah,
it's yours.
I wouldn't, because I wouldn't even know what was happening. I would probably miss out on something exciting because I would just be like, oh, this is a weird looking function. And I would just boop, control alt delete, like whatever the reset thing is, and call it a day.
You get a weird text message. I don't recognize that number. Swipe.
Swipe. I do delete text messages from numbers I don't know.
The millions of dollars you flush down the toilet.
I know. Look at me. Well, Beach, speaking of millions of dollars, not flushed down the toilet, but invested into innovation, let's talk about Disney Plus's The Right Stuff.
Sure. The Right Stuff is a new historical drama. It's based on the 1978 book by the same name, written by Tom Wolfe. And there's also a movie from 1983 with the same name. And in The Right Stuff, we're looking back at the space race. And we're looking at the Mercury 7 astronauts along with their families, as they are competing to find out who is going to be the first American in space. And so this drama series is bringing together some of those famous names we all know, such as Alan Shepard, who's portrayed by Jake McDormand, John Glenn, portrayed by Patrick J. Adams, and Gordon Cooper, portrayed by Colin O'Donoghue, as they are now competing and training in the Mojave Desert to see who has what it takes to achieve humankind's greatest achievement, the moon landing. So Mitu, what did you think about this story of the classic and well-known historical moment leading up to Man in Space?
It felt like a period piece. It felt very historically accurate. It felt like it was written and paced for someone who just wanted to know what was it like to be there moment to moment, not a second left on the cutting room floor. That is how the show felt. And I would also add that because the space program was 7 medium-build, physically fit white men, in that era, so conservatively dressed, conservative haircuts, all dressed and modeled in exactly the same way, I did have difficulty telling them apart in some scenes, especially the scenes where they were all in the bars together. That was a crapshoot for me. Could have been anyone tapping anyone on the shoulder.
There is a point where they are all dressed in the same colored suits, and you realize all of their haircuts are the same, which is because they're all military men. So they have a standard haircut.
Yes. And then especially being of that era, people were not playing games with looking like you are anything but a good old boy. But the problem with that is y'all, they really committed to the good old boy thing, could not tell the good old boys apart in some scenes. But I did like that it wasn't a show of hero worship. They're each complicated. We look at John Glenn, racing time. So he's presented as this humble, good guy, but also he's nervous. He's racing the clock. He's 38 years old, which is old in this universe. And so he still has this ego, this need for speed, this want to be in the sky, and he knows that his time is limited. Alan Shepard, a womanizer. So has this supportive wife at home, and I don't know the terms of their relationship, but he is out here. He has potentially an issue with alcohol, which is portrayed in the show, and a real issue with sticking to one woman. That's what's required of the program, is having a quote-unquote stable home life, which leads to Gordon Cooper, who does not have a stable home life. He's separated from his wife and has to hide that from the program. And he just lost one of his partners to a test fly. The pilot died, his friend. And so he's going through some stuff too. So I like that it's not blatant hero worship and they're complicated.
Yeah, it's really nice to see it's not all about how did we make these famous astronauts who they are today. It's them going through this, them nervous, unsure of themselves, competing against other people. And then we see their personal lives, their work lives, and we see that they do have very complicated personal relationships. We see hints of rivalries between them, and we see how their dynamics and tension might cause stress and conflict between the Mercury 7. And I think that is what's going to add to the appeal, so that if you do continue going on with it, Me Too, you will see that it's not strictly historical, like National Geographic, here are all the facts, 1, 2, 3.
You said this to me before we started recording. I'm airing you out a little bit.
Okay.
You said it felt like an Apple TV Plus show.
Yeah. And this is on Disney Plus. Executive producer Leonardo DiCaprio, so he signed some deal with Disney. But this feels like the Apple TV Plus prestige series that we've reviewed a few of so far.
It felt very morning show meets Space.
So it reminds me of Defending Jacob, where they're telling this really interesting and powerful dramatic story, but Apple TV Plus series always make me think that they are trying to be awards contenders, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, it's part of the industry, but I just have never associated that with a Disney Plus series.
How did you feel about the NASA scientists behind the scenes? Because they're really the ones running the show.
Well, you know, I respect a good scientist and enjoy their opinions. So in this, we have three of the scientists who actually helped start NASA. So we see Bob Gilruth, played by Patrick Fischler, Chris Kraft, played by Eric Layden, and Glenn Lunny, played by Jackson Pace. And it's really kind of a nice contrast to see these engineers thinking about what does it take to have a good pilot to go to space. We are seeing Alan and John and Gordon thinking of themselves as these great military men who are excellent pilots. But then the NASA scientists are looking for someone who isn't going to be too cocky, who isn't going to be too risky, who is stable. Although I think John Glenn does get a pass for his fame as well. But, you know, everyone has a fanboy.
I can't go without bringing up this scene. He also has a scene with the only Black character with a speaking role that we see. BJ, do you want to tell
our listeners? I don't want to tell.
Will you tell?
So we see John Glenn. This is at the height of his fame, and he has a magazine cover, and the issue has just been released, and he goes to a little storefront, little newsstand, and it is run by a Black man, or probably not owned by, but he's the one running the stand for the day. And he's really excited to see John. They have a relationship, and he's like, oh, your new magazine cover is out. Here you go. You should have this. It looks great. You look great. You're amazing. John is very thankful. I think that speaks a lot to just how John Glenn was as a person and how they're portraying him, is that he is very like a respectful man who tries to be gracious and kind to everyone. And so he responds with, actually, I'm going to buy two copies for both of us because I want you to have a copy of the magazine with my face on it. And we're just going to pretend that I don't already have a dozen copies of my own magazine back at home. Like my wife wouldn't want us to have some of those.
And what you're not doing, Beach, which I respect because I won't either, is the accent that the actor... Sometimes when I see stuff like that, I just think, that must be tough to do sometimes as an actor. Because that was his shot at being on the show too.
Yeah, it's that tough decision between, do I play it up for a paycheck and the hope that this could be my break? Or do I say, we're crossing a line and I don't want this opportunity to work with Disney, one of the biggest brands and companies in the world?
That's a tough one. I don't fault the actor. So, Beej, would you watch more episodes of The Right Stuff on Disney Plus?
I would watch again while doing laundry. I think that this would be a good series to have in the background to learn a little bit more about the Mercury 7 and how we got to launching man into space. But I don't need to see all the details of like the home life and getting all those relationships to be presentable for NASA. So I think I could just watch it in the background where I'm miss some of the details, but see the rivalries progress. How do you feel about it?
I don't think this one is for me. I think if you like historical shows, you might like this one, but it was just a little bit boring for me. It really did feel like they gave us every second of every minute. Maybe if the show were 20 minutes, I would watch it, but definitely not at this 45-minute length.
Gotcha. So you're going to read the book instead. I get that. That's more your lane.
I did read an autobiography John Glenn wrote. I think it was an autobiography. My dad had me read it when I was a child.
So now you need to read The Right Stuff. Check it out at your local library, Me Too. Download it to your Kindle. And let me know what differences you notice between this pilot episode and the first few chapters.
Maybe. All right. So, Beej, where can people find more episodes of the Pilot Podcast?
They can head to our website at thepilotpodcast.com. And you can always subscribe to us on all of your favorite podcast platforms.
You can follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at thepilotpod. And you can send thoughts, feelings, show recommendations, because every other week we do a listener recommended show, to askthepilotpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Bye.